This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Susan Swain, host of C-SPAN's Q&A. We're taking a break for a few weeks in August, and we'd like to use this opportunity to introduce you to some of C-SPAN's other podcasts. BookNotes Plus offers listeners nonfiction books and authors with C-SPAN's Brian Lamb. You'll hear historian Harlow Unger, who talks about the work and legacy of Thomas Paine, America's most famous political pamphleteer. Mr. Paine's political writings inspired American revolutionaries, but his later writings on religion made him a pariah.
Harlow Giles Unger is an American author, historian, and journalist. He has written close to 30 books, 10 of those about America's founders. Mr. Unger is an undergraduate of Yale and got his master's degree at Cal State University. This year he turned 89, is still active, and we talked about his book by common sense author Thomas Paine during our conversation. Harlow Giles Unger, tell us about Thomas Paine. Who was he?
Thomas Paine was certainly one of the most interesting figures in America, even in the history of the Western world at the time of the American and French revolutions. He was really a nobody. He came out of a small town called Thetford, England, about 75 miles north of London, and grew up a Quaker. The problem with his Quaker meeting house is they would sit all day in silence, awaiting a word from God. And the only words they heard were the screams of people at the whipping post and the cries for water at the stocks. So he began to doubt the existence of God, and certainly he denied the existence of any religious basis for the Quaker religion, and soon he denied the need for the existence for all religions, calling them all bases of mythology. Founded at the age of mythology, the end of the first ages of mythology, after Greek mythology had died out and Roman mythology had died out, now came the Judeo-Christian mythologies of Moses and then Christ and God himself. So those are the origins of his thinking at that time, and it was at the time of revolution, so he denied the existence of any divine right of kings, which absolutely flew in the face of the British royalty, French royalty, of all the royalties of the Western world. And, of course, it played right into the hands of leaders of the revolutions in England, in the United States first, and then in France.
Your book has a chronology in front that says he was born in 1737. When did he come to the United States and why?
He came to the United States because he was broke, as were many people who came to the United States at that time. He had gone from pillar to post, working as a first for his father as a staymaker, making the stays that made women's corsets stiff, and so that when they were tied around the women's bellies, it gave them a wasp-like figure, and presumably made them more handsome to the men. He quit staymaking, visited London, and grew excited by the knowledge that was available in London. There was a group called the Royal Society that had been founded a century earlier, which hosted lectures by scholars of the day. And he went there. It was free of charge. He went there religiously and just absorbed engineering, absorbed astronomy, absorbed history, history of art, every imaginable study. It was he absorbed the equivalent of what we would call a university education, which was not unusual in that day. Many scholarly men without formal educations became what were called autodidacts. George Washington was an autodidact, and of course Benjamin Franklin was the most famous of the autodidacts, who became a great scientist. So he now had all his knowledge, but still couldn't get work. He started writing articles. He got a job as an exciseman, that's a customs officer, in a small town called Lewes in Sussex. And he wrote a 21-page petition to Parliament for higher wages for excisemen and was fired. As it happened, Benjamin Franklin had seen that petition and thought it was a brilliant petition. Just at the time, though, Benjamin Franklin was fired by Parliament as agent for the American states. The two met, however. No one quite knows how they met, but they did. And Benjamin Franklin, who enjoyed sponsoring young men and young women, for different reasons with each gender, he decided to bankroll Thomas Paine's trip to America and give him letters of introduction to prominent people in Philadelphia, including his brother, who was then a governor of New Jersey, and to various people of consequence in Philadelphia. Paine left Britain, got to America, went to one of the contacts that Franklin had given him. He was the editor, he was the owner of the most prominent bookstore in Philadelphia and had ambitions about starting a magazine. He needed an editor. Paine showed him clips of his articles that he had written, and he was hired. Paine turned that magazine into a bestseller, from just a handful of readers to thousands of readers. I'm exaggerating, but to 1,500 readers, which at the time was enormous for a local magazine.
Put this in let me interrupt just to ask you this. Put this in context. In the year 1776, he was 39 years old. In January, he writes Common Sense. In July, we have the Declaration of Independence. And in December, he finds himself with George Washington when he crossed the Delaware. How did all that happen?
Well, the first thing that happened was writing the Common Sense, which showed the idiocy of divine right of kings. Why should someone rule an entire people simply because he was born in a certain family? Why should a tiny island govern the people of an entire continent? These are questions that no one could answer, and would lead to being drawn and quartered if you ask them in England. How came the king by a power which the people are afraid to trust, always obliged to check? He asked. He said such a power would not be the gift of a wise people. So he questioned the entire system of government, and Americans began to wake up. certainly the literate Americans began to wake up. And in Philadelphia was the largest, most important city in America, and that was where he made his name. So he was very well known for that. And then the Revolutionary War broke out. He volunteered. He was with Nathanael Greene's forces and began writing little articles to support the revolution. And the Continental Army suffered terrible defeats. The British absolutely massacred the Americans in Brooklyn, forced them out of New York, across New Jersey, and they were now just east of Trenton, New Jersey, for the night, and suffering terrible defeats day after day after day. And Thomas Paine started writing his first American crisis piece. He showed it to Washington, and Washington thought it was absolutely terrific, that it would revive morale. He sent Paine down to Philadelphia by himself, on horseback, obviously, to have a printer print copies. Copies of it were then, Paine brought them back to the banks of the Delaware, where on the night before the Battle of Trenton, the officers were given copies of this first article, and it was read to all the troops and inspired them as they had never not been inspired before. These are the times that try men's souls. It was snowing. It was Christmas night, and all that you could hear were the voices of these officers reading Thomas Paine's words. They got in the boats, crossed the Delaware, and with Tom Paine among them, carrying a musket for the first time in his life, he didn't really know what to do with it, but he charged it up King Street and Trenton alongside all the men, and they defeated it was a Hessian force of mercenaries. They defeated them and proved to themselves, first of all, and to the world and to the rest of the American people, that they could defeat this professional army from abroad and become independent, an independent nation. It turned the tide of American morale.
Harlow Unger, what book is this book, Thomas Jefferson and the Clarion Call for American Independence, for you?
It was Thomas Paine.
I'm sorry, yes. Thank you.
Thomas Jefferson never fired a shot in the Revolutionary War, to his discredit. After pledging his life, his sacred honor, the terrible thing about that Americans have done to Thomas Paine, and indeed the Western world, is to ignore him. He was one of the most important figures in the history, in the Western history, and certainly in the history of the American Revolution. John Adams said that, and I'm quoting John Adams now, I know not whether any man in the world has had more influence on its inhabitants or its affairs for the last 30 years than Tom Paine. These are the times that try men's souls, words that for generations, American schoolboys could recite. Now no one even knows them. And the reason is because Tom Paine did not stop with leading the overthrow of monarchies. He continued by overthrowing every type of monarchy, not just living monarchs, but spiritual monarchs. he attacked religion as a form of monarchy. He pointed out that the first kings in the Western world, William the Conqueror, who became the first king of England, William the Conqueror was nothing but a thug. He was a thug from France who got on a boat with a bunch of other thugs, and they landed in England to see what they could scavenge. And there were a bunch of fishermen minding their own business, and they brutalized them. And eventually he said, "I'm king of England." And to ensure his being king, he combined with churchmen and convinced the church that they could both get rich by establishing divine right of kings. God sent William to become king of England. That took hold across Western Europe. It was a good deal for both the church and for thugs who wanted to be kings. So he wrote a book, his last great book, The Age of Reason, in which he takes, he shows the history of religion as starting with the age of mythology, the Greek mythology with Jupiter and as king of the gods, and then Roman mythology with Zeus as the king of the gods. And when the Roman Empire fell, well, in came in the Middle East, the Jews with Moses getting these commandments from God, and then the Romans invented Christ to be the Son of God, and it was just simply a continuation of mythology. And he takes the Bible and the New Testament and shows the origins of each statement almost in mythology, and he shows the discrepancies. At the crucifixion of Christ, you've got four apostles witnessing the same event, the crucifixion of Christ, and one of them says, after the crucifixion, there's an earthquake. An earthquake shakes the whole earth, and the other three don't feel a thing. Payne says that's more than a curiosity. That means this is pure mythology.
Let me just interrupt to say that he did the Age of Reason when he was 59, and if I understand from your chronology, he was in Paris at the time. But before I ask you a question from the Age of Reason, I asked you earlier, and I was misunderstood. I wanted to know what book this book is of yours. How many have you written before the Thomas Paine book?
Oh, this is my 27th book.
And you live where in the United States?
I live in New York right now.
New York City or New York State?
New York City.
Are you working on another book, by the way?
Not really. I've been down with COVID, and so I've just laid everything aside for the moment.
How's that going?
Well, I'm going to see the doctor this afternoon to see if it's I think it's a little bit better.
How long have you had
about a week.
Wow. Well, let me keep moving here so that you can have some time to yourself. If you go back to the Age of Reason, this quote is, and you have quotes in the back from him from all the chapters. He says, "How was Jesus Christ to make anything known to all nations? He could speak but one language, which was Hebrew, and there are in the world several hundred languages. As to the translations, it is impossible to translate from one language to another without losing a great part of the original. And besides all this, printing was wholly unknown at the time of Christ." What kind of an example is that of what he was trying to get across in the Age of Reason? And what was the reaction to religious people?
Well, it, it's perfect logic of Tom Paine's mind. There is nothing logical about anything in religion. There's nothing logical about anything in mythology. As he says, the Testament teaches nothing new. He points out, what is it the Bible teaches us? Rapine, cruelty, and murder. What is it the Testament teaches us? To believe that the Almighty committed debauchery with a woman engaged to be married, and the belief of this debauchery is called faith. He sought to expel all ideas of revealed religion as dangerous heresy. Nothing in mythology makes sense unless you're willing to believe in fiction.
So, what was the reaction on the in? When right before we started this podcast, we were talking about the fact that he's not well known in the United States. Thomas Paine, as you say, had a big influence with Common Sense and the other books. Why do we not know more about him?
Well, that was a startling discovery I made. I mean, the most startling discovery I made in researching Thomas Paine. One of the things I always try to do is go back to my own history books as a youngster. History books for youngsters tend to simplify everything and give you a broad outline of history. And I went back to my history book at a prestigious secondary school in Connecticut and looked for Thomas Paine. Not a word about him. Not a word about Thomas Paine. Nothing about These Are the Times That Try Men's Souls. I went to my son's school at a fine secondary school in Westchester County, New York, and looked at the history books there. Nothing in those history books. At best, they'll say that he wrote Common Sense. He's dismissed with one or two sentences. And because textbooks usually are subject to examination by church authorities to make sure that they won't offend any churches, I think that the churches have combined to keep his name Age of Reason, anything to do with the Age of Reason, out of the textbooks that go to young people in America.
Go back the beginning of his time here in the United States. Is there any way to describe how big an impact Common Sense had and how many copies it sold?
It's fairly difficult because of the times. Most people were illiterate. And most pamphlets or magazines or newspapers, the printer were published by printers. The printer would put the pages of an article in the window, and passersby could then see it. Usually, a crowd would surround the window of the shop and wait for someone who could read to begin reading it out loud. So you'd have one person reading and a crowd standing around him. The influence, though, of Common Sense was quite enormous. According to the diary entries of people like John Adams Benjamin Rush, who was a famous physician in Philadelphia, it was immediate because no one had questioned the divine right of kings. No one had questioned the idea that God had placed these men on earth to rule Americans.
You say in your book that he was he said he was a deist. How does that track with his book on the Age of Reason?
Well, I think there are probably a number of definitions of deist, although not literal definitions. No, the word is the etymology of the word is clear, but he was unable to explain, and he tried all his life, anything to do with the origins of the Earth. He dismissed the idea of a first cause, that there was some event that that God created the Earth, God created light, and God created this and God. That he dismissed. There was no first cause. But he couldn't go beyond that. He obviously didn't have the knowledge or the instruments or anything else to do so. So he settled on the existence, which was a common theory in those days. Freemasonry was a very, very popular brotherhood in those days. And they too believed in the existence of a higher power, for lack of any other description, a higher power that had to do with the origins of the Earth and solar system and the universe. And that's why Thomas Paine was so popular among the Freemasons. George Washington embraced him. Thomas Jefferson embraced him, Benjamin Franklin. They were all Freemasons and believed as he. They believed that everything else was nonsense. George Washington made a show of going to church because he didn't want to, and only occasionally, because he didn't want to alienate the religious people that he knew whose backing he knew he needed. He was a confirmed Freemason.
What kind of reaction did you get out of this book?
Not much. The interesting thing about most books about Thomas Paine, except for the fictional one years and years ago called Citizen Tom Paine, which was more about the French Revolution, people are, newspapers, everything, they're afraid to deal with this topic. It's a very dicey topic that, in effect, insults millions of people.
Well, you put in the book that he was in the United States and back to London and in Paris during the Revolution, thrown in prison and all that, and then eventually comes back to the United States where he dies, but in the middle of your book, you explain that he had a falling out with George Washington.
Yeah, the explanation is obvious, but it seems to be, for some reason or other, difficult to make people understand. I've had comments about that on Facebook, and it's very difficult to get people to understand that mail, you didn't sit down and write a letter, and it would get in the hands of a mailman who would put it on a boat and it would sail across the seas and get in the hands of someone else. Mail was delivered by hand. You had to give it to a friend who was bound for Europe, and maybe 2 months later it might get into the hands of someone to whom it was addressed. Tom Paine was put in jail in London, in Paris, and he tried writing. He expected that his simple notoriety, that George Washington would hear of it. George Washington was busy trying to put together a government in America. He hadn't heard a thing from Tom Paine either. He assumed that Tom Paine was busy putting together a revolution in France. So he dismissed the fact that Tom Paine hadn't written to him. Tom Paine, meanwhile, lands in prison and starts writing and thinks that by giving the letter to the jailer, the letter is going to be given to someone, and it's going to be given to someone else and someone else, and it's eventually going to get to Washington, and it never did. None of his letters ever reached Washington. Washington would have reacted immediately had he known. He knew nothing about it. And later on, during the imprisonment, when James Monroe, who thought the world of Tom Paine, comes over as the first American ambassador to the French Revolutionary government and is celebrated by the National Assembly, he doesn't even know Tom Paine is in Paris. Actually, the letters that Tom Paine wrote were a few of them got into the hands of Gouverneur Morris, who was then the American ambassador to the Revolutionary government, and hated Tom Paine and threw those letters out, tore them up, never sent them anywhere. And that's a whole other story as to why that happened. But James Monroe heard from some friends of Paine in Paris that Paine was in prison, and he took. And it was after about 2 months after he landed there, and he took immediate steps to get Paine released from prison, and indeed brought Paine to the ambassadorial residence and helped him get well. And he and his wife treated Paine like an honored guest and helped him get healthy again. So the story of... Now, unfortunately, Tom Paine's mind was then made up that Washington had ignored him and that their friendship was over. And that is just unfortunate.
You point out that he died in 1809. He was 72 years old. You tell us a story about him dying up in New Rochelle, New York, his body being buried there, and then having someone 10 years later dig up the bones and take them to Great Britain, and they've never found them.
That's the amazing thing. God knows who it was. They do know it was a Brit of some makeup. They don't know why. Was it political? Was it religious? They have no idea what the reason for that was.
Do you think there'd ever be a statue of Tom Paine anywhere in Washington, as a lot of other famous early Americans have
no.
their statues, and why not?
No, I don't think so. We're lucky we're still able to write books about him.
What do you think you would have thought of him if you had known him personally?
Well, I grew up in a family of scientists, so I think I would have agreed with everything he said. I'm not much of a believer in mythology.
And is that one of the reasons you wrote the book in the first place?
No, I have been writing books about men whom, as a group, I call the Founding Fathers. They're not all really Founding Fathers, but they're the people that I think have been most influential in establishing the principles of the United States of America as I grew up knowing them.
I see the list of Lafayette, Patrick Henry, John Quincy Adams, James Monroe, John Marshall, Richard Henry Lee, and Dr. Benjamin Rush. Are there others you want to mention?
Well, I think Robert Morris certainly fits in there. And of course, several of the people David McCullough has written about, John Adams, of course, and
Well, let me, we're at the end of our chat. Let me just tell the audience, our listeners, that the book is called Thomas Paine and the Clarion Call for American Independence. Our guest has been Harlow Giles Unger. And before we leave, we'll wish you the best, the recovery on COVID.
Well, thank you very much. I think I'll probably be all right. I've been in very good shape, so there's no reason that I shouldn't recover.
Thank you, Mr. Unger.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, you can find Book Notes Plus and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, Q&A will be right back here with new episodes in September.